This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. My co-host, Meghna Chakrabarty, is out today. Beverly Scott came to Boston about 2 months ago to take over the MBTA as general manager. Here's a little background about her. She's 61, the first woman and second African-American to lead the T. Before she came to Boston, she spent 5 years running the public transit system in Atlanta. And as her contract neared its end, she wasn't looking for another job. But Boston came calling, and now she's running the country's fifth largest transit system. But with big jobs come big challenges. The T is the nation's oldest subway system, with aging and creaky equipment and a long backlog of maintenance needs. It has billions of dollars in debt, which make for crushing debt bills and yearly structural deficits. And it only has one income source, the state sales tax, which can't keep up with the demands. Add to that a grumpy traveling public, which wants their buses and subways but doesn't want to raise fares and taxes. And the first question you might want to ask Beverly Scott is, why on earth would anyone in their right mind want this job? Well, we can ask her that and a lot more because Beverly Scott, general manager of the MBTA, joins us now. And great to have you at Radio Boston. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. It's absolutely a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. And congratulations and welcome. My grandfather was in the Navy, and he used to say to people, welcome aboard.
So, thank you. Thank you.
Welcome to Boston. And listeners, what's your question for Beverly Scott? Do you depend on the T? And if so, how would you like to see it improved? How do you think it stacks up against other modern metropolitan transportation systems? Are you willing to pay higher fares, higher taxes for a better system, for a more up-to-date and modern system? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter as well at Radio Boston. And Beverly Scott, let's jump right into that first question that I pose. Given all the challenges at the MBTA, given your resume and all you've done, it seemed like you were in a place in your life when you could have happily sort of, I don't know, walked off in another direction. Are you thinking, oh my God, what did I get myself into?
No, Anthony, honestly, I had a friend who said, Beverly, do you have suicidal tendencies? And then quickly took it back and said, no, but it's a T. I tell you that I honestly don't think that there's another one that that I would have wanted to come to, okay? It is, I have said it, and it is not, it's no tongue-in-cheek. The T is, it is, it's transit royalty. It's like old fine wine. It's the T, okay? Now, having said that, and facing all of the challenges, some in spades that you find with all the big public transportation systems around the country, and that has been just a staggering lack of investment in infrastructure of all types, but certainly on the public transportation side, it's been pretty horrifying over the last several decades. Now, having said that, what was exciting? One, it is the T, most integrated system of all. I mean, we got all the modes, the whole. I mean, you couldn't ask for more in terms of quality and content. The one alignment. Absolutely, a region that gets it. I've worked at eight systems. When the secretary we talked and he was interviewing me, he said, "Bev," he said, "look," he said, "I really very much see hopefully renaissance in our future." He said, "But at the same time, it is no joke, staggering debt." He said, "I need someone who can do renaissance, or if need be, can do rollback." So I laughingly said to him, "I said, well." I said, Rich, I said, I have done.
Richard Davey, the current Secretary of Transportation.
Secretary. I said, well, I've had an opportunity through my career, 35 years almost, of being able to do renaissance probably about three times. Mm. I said, and I've been doing much too much rollback, and it would be just an honor and really a privilege to be able to end it up at the T on a renaissance.
Well, you've worked in Atlanta, you've worked in Washington, D.C., New York, Providence, Rhode Island. I mean, how do we stack up? I mean, I think in Boston we tend to sort of, take refuge in sort of how bad things are, and the T, it's indebted and it's old and it's creaky. But, I mean, how do we stack up with a big vision about public transportation given compared to other cities?
Oh, Anthony. Honestly, pound for pound, I have never. So how do we stack up? Fifth largest. I mean, like I say, most integrated. We have everything. We got water. We got commuter rail. We got heavy rail, light rail. So everything that a transportation kind of junkie would want to have in terms of content, we've got it. Okay. But I tell you something that I feel here that I have never felt any place else is such a connection. I was telling the senior management team one morning, I said, let me tell you what I feel here that I've never felt anyplace else. I said that the deep connection between people in this community with this system, I am not going to call it a love-hate relationship. I said, honestly, do you know what's happened? I said, people have entrusted us to watch. They've entrusted the tea to our care on our watch. Now, that does not mean that it's almost like an extended family. That does not mean that I don't want you to do more and I don't want you to do better and I don't want you. It's almost like that brother that you have, that older brother that's at the dinner table that you can talk about, but nobody else can. And there is an absolute just a connection is the best way I can say it in terms of this community and the tea that I've never experienced anyplace else.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned this connection, and I understand that your predecessor, Richard Davey, now the Secretary of Transportation, likened this job to managing the Red Sox, the other sort of local treasure, and he asked you if you knew who Terry Francona was, and I guess you could be forgiven at that moment for not knowing who Terry Francona was.
Right.
But give me a sense of your big vision for, I mean, we're going to get down and sort of talk the nitty gritty and how to deal with a structural deficit and what the governor wants to do in terms of raising money. But what's Beverly Scott's vision for the T? Because you've been described by those who know you best as visionary. What's the vision here?
Yeah, well, the first piece is I obviously have to fix what we have. Okay. And so I tell people we're always only as good as our last rush hour. And so making sure that absolutely the quality of the service that we put out on a day-to-day basis is the best that it can be. And I tell you the honest to God's truth, that focus in terms of transportation excellence is critical. Now, at the same time, I am one who you will very seldomly hear me talking a whole lot. So you talk about vision. I don't really talk a whole lot about transportation. To me, and the reason that I have really stayed in this industry all of these years is because of the absolute profound impact that we have on people's lives on a day-to-day basis, and we have on the communities in terms of strengthening the communities we serve. So what does transportation in terms of the big picture? I say, look, what are the outcomes that we are trying to achieve? And then transportation, mobility and access is like the blood vessels. Mm-hmm. So what are we looking at? We're looking at jobs. We're talking about economic development. We're talking about healthy lifestyles, healthy communities, environmental sustainability. I laugh with people all the time. We can hug every tree in the world. But the bottom line is that what winds up contributing to greenhouse gas emissions and climate change issues is an appetite for voracious consumption of petroleum. Mm. And the only way that we get our arms around that, and thank you, we can change all the light bulbs, is we have got to fundamentally change transform how we move people and how we move goods and commerce. Okay. And so when we talk about environmental sustainability, we talk about energy independence, we talk about jobs creation and economic development, we talk about environmental sustainability, all of that stuff. Hmm. We talk about affordability of
all
housing.
All those roads run all through public
those,
transportation. Yeah.
All of those roads, which are the outcomes that we're looking for. The what makes us who we are, the what is the legacy that we wind up leaving for our children. That's what making this fundamental investment and this, I mean, I swear to God, that's what's kept me personally in this business. It's not that I love all the big millions of big things that move and the cables and all that, but at the end of the day, whether or not people can get from point A to point B, whether or not we are doing an effective job in terms of being able to literally move freight and commerce, those communities, regions, and states that do that very well are the ones that rise to the top of the pack, and those that don't become the also-ran. So the vision for me is, I always laugh. I said, it ain't about what Bev's talking about. Mm-hmm. It's about what is it that we think is what moves the line up, if you will, for us as individuals and as communities. And that's what transportation helps us do.
All right. Well, that's a big statement about what a good and robust public transportation system can do. Let's get down to some of the nitty gritty. I mean, you said the system needs to be upgraded. Of course, Governor Deval Patrick agrees. He wants to spend something like $13 billion over the next decade. Tell us exactly what kind of improvements you think the system needs. I mean, I know you could probably talk for a long time on that. We don't have a lot of time, but maybe the top three things.
Oh, Anthony, the investment in terms of rehabilitation and replacement. I mean, you look at this system. So let's just say, you know, roughly $9 billion of it is going to wind up going in just fix it first. And when you look on the T side of the house, a good 70% of it is going in just basics. Okay, one, we got Orange Line vehicles, 120 of them that are old. They go back to the 1980s. The typical life cycle, if you will, for cars is 25, maximum 30 years old. Okay, we've got Red Line cars that need to be replaced, and we're talking about these are. To wind up doing a rail car today, and I know people say, oh, God, but one car, replacing one car is over $4 million, yeah. Okay? And so when we start talking about all of this, so you will wind up seeing replacement of vehicles in all the Orange Line vehicles wind up getting replaced. We will wind up doing major work. Red Line, we're going to do a replacement of a third of those, overhauls on the others. We have on the Green Line, we'll wind up doing a substantial portion of replacement there. We got about $450 million. It's going to be tied. Let's go to bus. I always laugh and call bus the with no tongue-in-cheek, the Rodney Dangerfield of transit, doesn't get all the respect that it needs, but carries most of the passenger trips. Significant change in terms of replacement on the bus side of the house, as well as some reinvestment. And then all the stuff that I call is kind of the behind-the-scenes pieces that people don't see, the cables, the power, the track. I mean, there's over $300 million that's in all that stuff that's the kind of the silent infrastructure, if you will. And so those are the kinds of things that are very, very, they're just real.
Real stuff, but they also cost real money. So let me ask you about this, because, of course, your efforts to do all of that is sort of part and parcel of the governor's desire to invest these billions, essentially, into into the state. What's your best case to make? Because this is going to come down to the people either paying higher fees and or higher taxes. What's the best case to be made for that?
And I'm going to come back again. And that's why I say it's not about what people are not doing. It's just making an investment in transportation. Mm-hmm. That is not the it. The case is, do we want jobs? Do we want economic development? Do we, in fact, want healthy and sustainable communities? Do we want energy independence? Do we want to make those kinds of investments in ourselves? And I can tell you one thing for doggone sure. There will never be a less expensive time, if you will, to wind up making the investments and making them now. Mm. So the reality is that, you know, when I look at the employees that are here, I take my absolute hats off to them, because they are like their masters. And on top of that, they're scrappers, because they could get out any day and start talking about, oh, excuse. Well, you know, this is 30, 40, 50, 60 years old. It's acceptable for it not to be reliable, whatever. But you cannot make bricks without hay. We have wound up. The system is absolutely too old to continue to believe that we can get reliability out of that system and the kind of competitiveness that we need to have without making additional investment.
Beverly Scott, she's the new GM of the MBTA. She's been here for a couple of months. And Beverly, I've got a lot of things I'd like to ask you, but we've already got a lot of callers on the line. So okay. I'd love to bring them in and sort of widen this conversation. And you'll see our callers will ask you big, wide questions and also some very specific questions about the way the T runs and so forth. So let's start with Paul, who's calling from Cambridge. Paul, you're on the air with Beverly Scott.
Thank you. Ms. Scott, I have had a question for as long as I've lived in Boston, which is 26 years now. Why can't the T on the Green Line sequence trains coming back from North Station or from the Lechmere area in a predictable fashion so that you get a B, a C, a D, and an E in order instead of three Bs, four Cs, two Ds, three more Bs, a C, and an E? It just doesn't make any sense to me, because they're all coming from the same place.
Paul, it's a great question.
Can't they be sequenced?
All right, why can't we sequence these trains? Like I said, Beverly Scott, some of these questions are going to be pretty specific.
What, Paul, I can't really tell you the answer to that one off the bat, okay? And so what I will tell you is that any questions or comments that I get that I'm not one that will tell you that I can give you an answer that I can't. I hear what you're saying. I know that we have significant overcapacity issues, if you will, in terms of the Green Line. It honestly is the most heavily utilized of the systems of that nature in the entire United States. And so it certainly is not because we're trying to confuse things for the public. I would tell you it's a capacity constraint, but if I could also get your detailed information, if you will, or you can just, anybody can send me an email and sure. I respond to them, bscott@mbta.com, and I'll be more than happy to get you the greater detail on
bscott@mbta.com. You can also put questions at radioboston.com, and maybe, Beverly Scott, we could get you to respond to some of those after the fact. That would be great. All right, let's go to Metin. He's calling from Brookline. Metin, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
So I'm wondering, I think the T is a perfect example of the conflicts that can sometimes arise between government services, running them, the struggle between running them as a business and running them as the government organization they are, especially with the T where, you know, a lot of business models would involve a lot of firing, a lot of cuts, a lot of, you know, sort of changes to the price. But how do you keep in mind that it's a government organization, government-run system, you know, beholden to taxpayers and to politicians who are accountable to their constituents?
The first thing I'll say is that, and you've hit it directly on the nail in terms of the challenges that you always face in a, I will call it in public transportation systems, and that is that we have very much, there are certain things that we do that absolutely are lifeline, and there is a true, tremendous public benefit that comes, and there are people who really cannot afford to pay more, okay? And then on the other hand, because of the fact that at the end of the day, it does cost to run, how do you wind up doing the balance? And honestly, much of that winds up resulting in terms of exactly what is the ethos and the underpinning belief, if you will, of the community that you're serving. And I'll be very honest with you, there is not a right or a wrong answer. But I find that across the country, there are some communities that wind up really appreciating the value of public transportation in terms of its multiplier effect and the benefits that are derived from it. And so as a result, they take much more of a broad regional or statewide approach of investment comes from everybody because everybody's getting the benefit. On the other hand, there's some portions of the country, once again, not a right or a wrong, that say, well, you know what? No. What we're going to do is that we're going to place most of the benefit, the most of that requirement, if you will, on the person who's the user that winds up using the system. I can tell you that what you can definitely see in this region, and part of it is you just look at the demographic. 1 out of 8 people, certainly in the Boston area, do not own an automobile. And that is both people who have made lifestyle decisions because they just choose to be able to have that different kind of life where they do not, in fact, wind up having to be shackled, if you will, by an automobile, as well as individuals who are utilize public transportation because of the fact that it is a lifeline. So I say for public transportation agencies that at all times internal productivity and cost containment, I am not one that believes at all that we get a pass on that. I think we have a responsibility to be good stewards of the public tax dollars. At the same time, I do say that there are greater benefits, if you will, that come from the investments that, and I'll call it not spending, investments that we make in public transportation that wind up going to everybody. And so as a result, I'm personally one who believes that those are that supports why everyone should, in fact, wind up helping to pay.
Beverly Scott, let me ask you a question that sort of is a follow-on to Matt, and this comes from Kendra Thomas on Facebook. She says, when does Beverly Scott plan to conduct a thorough and independent review of her workforce, including inefficiencies, redundancies, and an overhaul of talent management and acquisition systems that are outdated and manifest themselves in poor customer service and inoperable equipment? That's maybe a little bit of a loaded question, but the idea there, do you plan to conduct a thorough and independent review of your workforce?
Well, in fact, one of the pieces that I have talked with the secretary about, I'm very much one who believes in terms of the workforce, is to do a comprehensive 360 degree, if you will, in terms of the workforce development, the pipeline, what we need to have in terms of being able to develop and be the best that we can of the current workforce, as well as all of the issues in terms of executive and succession planning. Also looking to, because one of the things that is in this Way Forward plan is also, I call it the building and growing our own, which would be to be able to do some of the work that we currently, by the billions of dollars, have to wind up shipping out to places like New York and Philadelphia and South Korea, for us to wind up being able to take a look at being able to create manufacturing and workforce development opportunities here. Now, I will tell you that there has been quite a bit that's been done at the T in the entire area of what I call transportation reform, and that's looking at economies, efficiencies. There have been major changes in terms of the pension plan, the medical plan. That was one of the things, honestly, that excited me about coming here, because you can't do the kind of stuff that we're talking about if you're not prepared to deal with it on the foundation of transportation reform that I think sets the way for transformation. So I have already, every single audit, I'm not one that just comes in because I've been around too long. I'm not one that just comes in and just does audits for audit's sake. I've taken a look at every single audit that's been done of the agency. And believe me, as the fifth largest public transit system in the country, we have a bunch of people who wind up doing auditing. I've taken a look at every single one of the audits, all of the open items, anything that's open, anything that are what I call repeat audit findings, so that we make sure that we place absolute focus on those. And then there's some other areas, particularly some of the areas like inventory and logistics and things of that nature, that I think that we can do differently.
Let me sort of throw in a question here about priorities. And we only have about a minute left, but I do want to ask you this. The governor's calling for extended hours, extended lines. You began the segment talking about the need for new cars and really upgrading an old system that needs upgrading. Can you do both?
I'm going to tell you, we need to do three things, okay? And so this should not be an either or. One, absolutely a focus in terms of the emphasis on fix it first. And so that's why you see over 70% of the program there. But there are two other pieces that have to wind up happening. One, some strategic targeted investments, new investments that need to take place, as well as a third piece, which is upgrading and modernization. And that's where you see things like the South Station project, because if we in fact do not wind up in an old system improving and enhancing core capacity, then what winds up happening is that the additional growth that we want to have, an expansion for things like commuter rail and ultimately at some point in time high speed rail, cannot happen, and we choke ourselves. Okay. And so for those who say, you only do one, I say that's looking at the whole, not the donut. We need to do all three things. Focus in terms of fix it first, make strategic and targeted investments that wind up moving the needle for the Commonwealth and for the region, and at the same time looking where we need to do modernization and upgrade programs and investments in core capacity.
Well, Beverly Scott, MBTA General Manager, welcome again to Boston. Thanks for coming into Radio Boston. And we still have listeners on the line. And listeners, you can post your questions at radioboston.org. And Beverly Scott said she'd be happy to respond to them. Thank you for coming in. What a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you so much. I've been absolutely delighted. And one thing I was very delighted that we didn't have Baby Nemo this weekend.
All right, no Baby Nemo. Stay with us. There's more program ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.